Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for all coming out to the convention and especially listening to what my parents and I have to come to share today. It is truly a gift to be able to see and share with all of you. My name is Isabel.
Hi, Isabel.
And my home group is the Santa Barbara 5:30 p.m. Al-Anon meeting. I can only imagine the time and dedication it takes to put on such an event annually. So thank you from my family and everyone here to everyone who put an effort into creating this weekend. Your service is why we can come here, be so transparent with each other, and grow alongside each other. So thank you. To begin introducing myself, I am the perfect daughter to the outsider's eye. Throughout my life... Thank you for the laughs. Throughout my life, I've spent curating the perfect image of who Isabel should be. Put together a rock for everyone around her, a provider, supporter, advocator, protector, and above all, perfect and completely in control. There was nothing I could not do simply because there was no room to fail. I'm the oldest in my family, in my extended family, and on either side, on both my mom and dad's. The first, and therefore there's a precedent to be set, and my family life created the perfect opportunity for me to learn what it means to keep secrets and to uphold an image. These rooms were where I have been able to become messy in front of other people, because the people here are messy. We can be gross sometimes with shameful stories and mistakes, but we are accepted with open arms, and it has truly changed my life. I have only known my dad was an alcoholic the past 5 years as he's gotten sober. That began in November of 2018. My dad was kicked out of the house, and as you'll hear, we had many different reactions to him moving out. I remember feeling relief. The weeks building up to him felt like, in an excuse a teenager analogy, having a painful pimple that keeps building and building, and once it finally leaves, all you can think is thank God, because the whole time it was there, it was so painful. I can't remember. Much love to my dad.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I cried or not, but again, as I said, my dad leaving was expected, if not anticipated, for the last couple years of my life. But before we get to November, let me take a breath. We can start looking at where I began realizing my dad wasn't like other dads. My earliest memory of the first warning sign of my dad's anger and disease was when I was around maybe 5 or 6, and my parents had gotten into an argument after St. Paddy's Day. And I'm sure you can see where it's going to, because of course, who stays sober on St. Paddy's Day? Definitely not an alcoholic. That night, he had punched a hole through our bathroom door in an argument with my mom, and I walked from the hallway. And that was the first time I realized my dad could get really mad. But as the years progressed, I saw more and more about our family just did not work together. It felt clicky and exclusive sometimes, and I couldn't really put my finger on why that was. However, my precious mom made an exceptional effort to still connect with both me and Ian, my brother. She would get us journals to pass back and forth and try to have date nights. She is truly the blueprint for the kind of mom I want to be. My dad was like a distant older brother. He would sometimes wrestle and play with us, pick us up from school on Thursdays, and argue with my mom. He didn't hold any authority in the house because we didn't respect him as kids. We were only scared of him. As I got scared of something else, however, the older I grew. Because out of both my parents, I got along better with my dad. If I spoke for too long with my mom, there was something to critique, and rightfully so, because on her end, she would tell me to be kinder or more grateful, and I agree with her points, were always correct, even if they came off harsh at sometimes. With my dad, it was mainly silence, because if we spoke about anything, it would seemingly always end with an argument. As I grew up and Ian came into the picture, I became highly protected of him. I even began poking fights with my dad out of, sometimes yes, fun, but also to try and get the total weight of his fire. In my mind, I could handle it. My dad and I were similar enough that even at a young age, I could yell back and get just as angry as him. We could get into each other's faces, and it was the only way I knew how to handle conflict for so long. One time, we were driving home from church, and my dad was getting on to Ian for painting his nails during the sermon. And I just jumped, and I attacked him. Looking back, I was looking for something to get on to him about. It was so easy to be upset at anything he did, because the person that he was enraged me. I started screaming in the car about what's wrong with that, and why was he so judgy, and when I thought even for a millisecond that he might hit Ian, even though I knew he wasn't, but again, I jumped. I became hysterical, screaming for him to not touch Ian, to never lay a finger on him, and I was just like my mom in that way, very eager to make him the villain no matter what. Even though I was like my mom in that way, all I could see in myself was how I was so much like my dad, and it was truly terrifying. Getting his validation was like a double-edged sword. I was so proud of myself and so worried about what I did to make him so proud. Whether it was Saturday morning chores or schoolwork, I would anticipate telling him what I was currently up to, each conversation akin to an interview, as I would put on display what I was doing, what I was working for, and how my plans in the end would ultimately make him proud. I'm president of this club, I have this many grades, I've done this research, etc. Before he got kicked out, though, I began noticing differences in my family and the ones around me. At a friend's house in sixth grade, I was shocked to find there was any alcohol in her house and that her parents could casually drink a glass of wine over dinner because the alcohol was never present in mind, due now to my mom hiding and eliminating my dad's options. One of our bigger fights before he left, I remember just yelling why we couldn't be like other families because I just genuinely didn't understand. I didn't know that he was an alcoholic yet, and I didn't realize what phantom was tearing this family apart. He sat me down, however, in a Starbucks in Sonora, California in November 2018 to tell me that he was an alcoholic. I remember right before he opened his mouth, I thought, oh, he's going to say something like, he's a drug addict or something. Because although I didn't know what was wrong with him, something had to be. There needed to be an explanation for his behavior. So I wasn't surprised when he told me he had a drinking problem. In fact, I basically remember just thinking that I had called it and I was psychic. And that was all I could think about. It was like a puzzle piece clicked into place and I could see the whole picture. Once my dad was kicked out, I felt at a loss with my mom. I always say I had a single mom raising me until my dad got sober. Of course, my dad was the primary financial provider for our home, but when it came to my interactions with him as a dad, there were very few. I was never a daddy's girl or a mom's girl. It seemed I was just a girl, and I didn't know why connecting with either parent was so hard. I often worried the reason why I couldn't connect with my mom was because I reminded her too much of the man she kicked out. My mom was always there, driving us to school, practices, and meetings, and I don't know how she did it all. As much as I can look back and appreciate and love her, although those two words cannot even begin to scratch the surface of my affection and gratitude for her, we constantly butted heads. I just felt like she didn't like me. Although a lot of my anger as a child was pointed at my dad, the only person there was my mom, who got the butt of it. And now it was just us. In many ways, the move out from my dad brought us a lot closer. It was just the three of us, and I secretly really liked it. It felt like the calm after a storm. The house breathed a sigh of relief, even as we all questioned what would come next. With my dad gone, my mom wanted me to go to my first Alateen meeting. My first thought was, what does she see wrong with me? Like I mentioned earlier, I wanted to be nothing like my dad, so knowing that she thought I needed the same program as him felt like a slap to the face. But I went, and I pouted through the meeting, scowling and wondering what the point of reading all these sayings over and over was going to do. Also, the kids there had gone through some insane shit. Nothing like I had, and I felt like I didn't belong. At the end, we got in the car, and I put my foot down. No more meetings. She silently agreed, and we drove home. As the years continued and we reached my junior year of high school, it felt like I couldn't win with either parent. My mom could see me pushing myself to death as I cooped myself up in my room all day during quarantine with my classes, my club meetings, my trainings, my intensives, studying for whatever I could. Again, keeping up that image of the perfect daughter, doing everything possible to keep myself distracted from the loneliness I felt, from the lack of connection with anyone in my life. Seeing my parents keep secrets growing up only taught me to hide mine too. It felt impossible to lean on anyone, and I let myself just become more alone. It felt like as if I had slept and ate less, pushed myself harder, and eventually got the grades or the internship. My dad still wasn't proud, but he could be satisfied. At the dinner table, when I would talk about another AP I was taking or another club I was a part of, my dad would make eye contact with me, and not appreciatively, and my mom would sigh and begin talking me out of it. The further I pushed myself to a severe breaking point, the more my dad's pride in me grew. On the other hand, my mom became more disappointed in my inability to know when to stop. In my mind, I would be fine if people saw that I was okay. In my family, you can see a cookie-cutter nuclear family, mom and father with a son and daughter in a suburban area with two dogs. But inside the walls of our home was a single mom with an unpredictable daughter and a peacekeeping son. Now I'm going to pause to clarify because at this point, my dad is sober. He got sober my first year of high school, and this is my junior year of high school. So he was now 2 years into sobriety. So why did I still think my dad was a dick? Of course, I didn't know what I know now, which it takes more than a few months or even a couple years to shake the habits of an alcoholic, whether they are sober or not. I haven't started my time in Alateen yet, and I couldn't see how his disease affected me. The family disease of alcoholism was something I wasn't ready to face yet. After my junior year, that summer, my family seemed to reach a breaking point with me. And honestly, as I look back, rightfully so, because I had become a raging bitch. Nothing could ever be right, and I was never happy, and didn't have the resources to reach a solid place. So finally, my mom sent me off to therapy to figure it all out, and we had a lot to talk about for sure. yet I couldn't be honest, even in a closed room with a stranger. It took months for me to stop sitting silently for an entire hour. The only things that made me speak were, one, I realized that this was a turning point in my life. If I didn't get help, I'd likely only get worse, and I wouldn't stop spiraling until I probably ended up in a hospital. Two, I was scared my therapist would think what my dad thought, that I was weak or had not worked hard enough because I had succumbed to this anxiety and depression to the point where I actually had to reach out for help. But I didn't want to live that way anymore. It was killing me, and I had promised myself I wouldn't adopt that same idea. And my parents were spending money on me. And I might be stubborn, but I will not waste their money. So I began to share. I was honest and open to change, and it was not easy, and it was so, so tiring. I became genuinely courageous during those one-hour meetings. I kept going, and it was good practice to finally return to Alateen eventually. So senior year of my high school rolled around, and I began to like myself. I only started to get comfortable not tearing myself apart in the mirror over small mistakes. And here again is where my mom suggested that my brother and I began attending meetings this time. I don't remember my first meeting, but I remember being happy I was going. Of course, I didn't show it and complained to my brother when he came to me annoyed and wanting to whine. Nevertheless, we attended every meeting, every week, no matter what. At first, I didn't share. I felt like my life wasn't traumatic enough to add to the conversation. Of course, it didn't help that through my time in Alateen, it was also my senior year of school. College applications, and I had recently come out, meant tension between my dad and I was high. It took a lot of courage for me to be that open and vulnerable with my parents about my personal life, and it felt like a stab in the back, although slightly expected, when it became another barrier and disconnection between my dad and I. Arguments included him saying, "What in your life is so hard?" that I wasn't strong enough to move away, making it difficult to feel confident in my own voice, even within meetings. However, it did not deter me enough to stop sharing. Once I started and felt how freeing it was to get those thoughts off my chest, honestly and openly, to a crowd of unjudging and loving strangers, Alateen became my second home. I looked forward to those meetings every Thursday, to that freedom I would get from my shares, and to the time I got with my brother, as I eventually began driving us to and from our meetings. The meetings made it clear to me that alcoholism is a disease, one that was skilled at infiltrating and changing the lives of those it consumes. Although I had liked to think that I could abstain from its effects, I still had difficulty setting boundaries, and my aversion to being truthful about how I was doing or how I felt continued to harm my relationships. And I still felt this anger in me. It felt constantly below the surface, especially at my dad. My dad, who had now begun to try and extend an olive branch, making dinner for me and playing my favorite artist. And I remember I couldn't even eat a bite because at that time I couldn't eat at all. I couldn't eat because I could not be not in control of one thing in my life, and I couldn't reach out for help. So I continued my meetings, and I had my last one in August, before I finally moved out and into college. In college, I was eager to find a new meeting. I tried a few Zoom ones, but nothing clicked as much. There were still very little pockets of home for me, but I'd wanted to begin building a faithful community instead of just temporary relief. The years passed, and I could never find a meeting without a car, and was generally running low on any free time. Towards the end of the year, I got closer with one of my friends, and in a conversation about anxiety, he brought up a prayer, assuring me that he was in no way religious, that he liked to repeat to himself when things got out of control. He recited this prayer for me. "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference," and I lit up. I did know the prayer, as it was engraved on my dad's 9-month sober coin that he had gifted me years ago, and I had said it at the beginning of every Alateen meeting for almost a year. From there, our bond only grew, and we both agreed to start attending meetings the next year. Our stories were strikingly similar, and we both found out the other having a parent qualifier was too much of a coincidence to ignore. Which brings me to this year. I've attended Al-Anon meetings with my friend in Santa Barbara, which I sincerely enjoyed. Already, I've been asked to help a woman begin Alateen meetings in Santa Barbara, and although I'm not sure where I stand with God, I know my higher power is helping me here and giving me opportunities to be of service and learn from those around me. Al-Anon has given me the second half of the healing, which is the wisdom from others who have been in the program much longer. Alateen gives a space for kids to have a shared pain, to not have to hold it all alone, to be messy and unashamed in front of a loving family group. In Al-Anon, I have people who can offer shared pain and a reason for that pain. How they dealt with and continue dealing with the pain is inspirational. I have started bringing my journal to meetings to soak up all that they can offer. I cannot be the perfect daughter, but I can be loving and introspective and work hard to provide for myself and those around me with serenity and safety. I will forever be grateful to my mom's courage for bringing us to those meetings and giving us that space to heal and have good conversation. My dad, her, and me standing up here today is a testament to her strength and love, but for this family, but most importantly for herself. It has forever changed my life and given me the chance to heal and have incredibly loving and healthy relationships in my personal life. And thank you to everyone here who makes these meetings and places of serenity possible. These rooms are like little pockets of home to me, and without them, I would not have the courage to be this formal girl in front of so many people.
Oh, wow. That was beautiful. Oh, I got a voice in my head saying, this is where you can cry, Eric. This is where you can cry. I love you. That was awesome. Well, my name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic, and I guess I'm the reason we're here. You're welcome. I told you I had a plan. Wow. Thank you, guys. This is a miracle that we're here. And I was looking at the pamphlet that has this weekend's events at the back. It's got all the years and the themes that went with the years, and I looked at the years where Sarah and I were going through some of our darkest times, and I thought, man, we were alone there suffering on the other side of the town, and you guys were here having a good time and celebrating. And I just thought, wow, you know, the same thing is happening today, this morning, in every direction, not far away from us. People are going through the same thing. And that's why we're here, and that's why we pass it on. And so thank you, because you guys are the reason that we're here. And Al-Anon saved our family. Al-Anon brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just can't say enough about that. So I wanted to start kind of in the same place Isabel did, that Sunday after Thanksgiving would have been 2018. And that was really the evening that changed the trajectory for our family and for myself personally. Sarah, that week before, had given me a letter saying, get the F out of the house, in a really nice way. And then she followed that letter up later that night with a meeting with another couple. And they were there for her. This was not about me. They wanted to make sure I heard what she was asking, and I was ready to follow through on her requests. So, that was Saturday. And then we put on our good costumes and went off to have Thanksgiving as a family. And went up to her parents' house, and every night I begged for her not to, you know, give me a death wish, and, you know, because I was going to, you know, who knew what I was going to do? But she held the line. And that Sunday night, I came back. I packed my bags. I said goodbye to 10-year-old son, Ian. Isabel was 14. And I might have hollered to Sarah in the back room, I'm out of here. And I went and I found a hotel. And I checked in, I put my suitcase in there, and I turned right back around. I closed the door, and I went across town to an AA meeting. And it was known as the, I said, well, this is the last house on the block. I better hold on with both hands and see what happens. And the rubber band meeting, as it was called, it's the most irreverent AA meeting. It's rowdy. And I loved it. And I got my sponsor in that meeting. I got a commitment. And I got a nickname. And I got to tell you this. So my nickname became Big Bed. Big Bed Eric the Alcoholic. And of course you resent it, you know. You know, what do you mean? I didn't get here because of my wife. She's not the reason I'm getting sober. Call me Big Bed. But it stuck. And, you know, it takes what it takes. You know, people come in because the doctor says, or the court, or they want their children back. And, you know, alcohol rotted from the inside out something that was so near and dear to me. And, I shared a lot about my love and my marriage. And so I'm Big Bed Eric, the alcoholic. All right, so Sarah and I met at a small Christian liberal arts college. Religion and church is a big part of our story. And we met in a death and dying class. That was the name of it. Of course, she was way out of my league, but I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, the box score could say I sat on the bench and I'm walking around like I made the buzzer beater shot, you know. I was never afraid to step up to the plate, although I did wait till the last hour of the last class to ask her number. But I got it. And that was December, and let's see, by February we were going pretty steady. And we had a lot in common. Consciously, we could see that we matched up. But what we didn't realize is subconsciously, we both came from the same place. And she could see right away that this guy didn't like the rules and loved to party. And you know, he had some struggles. You know, he had a lot of potential, but he had some struggles. And we both came from backgrounds where we kept secrets. That's where I grew up. And she could see I had a secret, and she knew how to keep one. So there was a connection happening on a level we were unaware of, really. So I got a DUI. We were dating, like I said, by February, and then that following, I think it was September, I got my first DUI. But it was in another state, and I was within eyeshot of my destination, and that one doesn't count. And so the following October, I got another DUI. And this one's over in Manhattan Beach. And that was a blackout driving DUI. Don't remember anything until, you know, I'm looking at the ocean. And that one was serious. And so I'm dating this girl that I care about. I got back-to-back DUIs. You know, what do? I ask her to marry me. I knew I better close the deal, you know? So that's where we started, right? We started in this thing together. And as a matter of fact, you know, with that second DUI, they gave me a paper. They said, you need to go to AA. You need to fill this out. As soon as I get that blank piece, I'm thinking, you know, five different colored pens, and I'll take care of this, you know. But Sarah says, no, let's go to a meeting. I'll go with you. So we're dating, and it's me, my girlfriend, in an AA meeting for my card. And that's where we started this relationship. And so, you know, I like to say that I'm on my second marriage to the same person. And you know, we had an alcoholic marriage, and that lasted for almost 20 years. And we've been married in recovery for 5 years now. You know, the big book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about alcoholism, says it's a progressive disease, that it gets worse, never better. And from the beginning, I can testify to that. It got worse, never better. But it didn't show up for us right away. I was able to outrun alcoholism for a while. And the first 5 years, you know, we're in our 20s and it's fun and we're going to parties. Nobody's got kids. We're doing more schooling. We start a company together. We start I start another business together. So we start a family, you know, 5 years into the marriage. But by about that fifth year, we knew that alcoholism was going to be the biggest, or we didn't say alcohol. It was always Eric's drinking problem. We didn't have a language about it. Eric's drinking problem was going to be a problem. And, you know, I will need help on time if somebody can help me with that. But I remember one drink specifically 5 years into the marriage. Sarah had always been okay with me having one drawer at the bottom of the fridge committed to my beer. And I could fit 18 beers in that bottom drawer. And there's something was soothing about getting that fridge full of beer. But she started noticing how quickly it would disappear. And she would make comments. Wow, man, that was full just the other night. And, you know, and what I heard was, I need you to fix my worry. Fix my concern. Don't, you know, you don't need to change this. And so I did that for her because I loved her. I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take two beers out, open one here, take one to the garage and open it, and then put another one right back where it was.